Hello and welcome to an all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. And today, we're joined by the two men behind the West Pine Bills account, John and Dan. Thank you guys for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Jinx.
All right, that was perfectly coordinated mess right there. So we'll roll things in. We're going to talk about the St. Louis Billikens, obviously, to start things off here. And then we got a little bit of a game to do on the back end. But I want to kick things off by really pulling out from the season here and looking at everything from a top of the mountain view. Yuri Collins is at 10.8 assists per game. He is almost 2 full assists per game over the next guy nationally. He is 5.8 up on James Bishop for the conference lead, with Bishop sitting in second at 5 straight up. So when we start to talk about the legends of St. Louis basketball, a pretty storied program, and we'll keep it a little bit tighter in here, in the 21st century, where does he rank just among the players of the last 20 years? So the Ford era, the Majerus era, basically. John, let's kick things off with you.
Oh man, that's a really tough question. I mean, I would say he's probably a top 10 Billiken in the 21st century. And my only real hesitance with that is that for all of the gaudy assist totals and everything that he's put up, I think there's really two points that kind of hold him back a little bit. One is how quiet a lot of these feel, especially this season with him taking it up to another level. The amount of times that, you know, we'll text each other during a game like, oh my God, Yuri has 11 assists. Like, you don't even realize it happening, where I think with guys that are big time scorers or shooters or, you know, anything else, I like Jordan Goodwin with rebounding, like it was very evident because of the effort that was going into it. I think at this point with Yuri, it's just so effortless and almost expected that it's kind of hard to take a step back and be like, oh my God, this guy is incredible at this. Like, we just take it for granted. But I also think the other thing, and, you know, right, wrong, or the other, but, you know, for Yuri's accomplishments and everything, it hasn't culminated in a tournament appearance yet. And I think that that's kind of that missing piece to say, okay, you know, this masterful passing display he puts on every night, like, has led to something greater, I guess, which is kind of the one hindrance. And maybe that's right, maybe it's wrong, but I'd say he's top 10 for sure. But I don't know, I put him maybe like 8 to 10 if I had to put a number on it.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. It is hard to put him, you know, top 4, top 5 when, you know, there's not a whole lot of team accolades to show for it. I mean, the numbers are insane, and I think you also need to take into account how he's not just the best passer in the country, but he's, you know, a first-team defender for the conference. He does a lot of other things really, really well. We've seen him score 30 points in a game. Obviously, that's not going to happen a lot, but he does a lot of other things really, really well, which kind of boosts him up. But yeah, like John said, I'd agree that it's difficult to put him up in that really top tier just because, you know, we haven't seen the team be, you know, as good as it was with, you know, the Jordan Jets and such.
I would add too, I think that if you circle back and ask us this question in like 5 years, I think you're going to get a wildly different answer. I truly think, and other people have said this as well, like, you collectively, like as SLU fans, conference as a whole, nationally, I don't think people are really going to understand what Yuri Collins is and how high his skill level is as a passer until he's gone for a few years. I think it's going to be one of those very apparent, like, you know, you don't realize how good someone is until they have to kind of replace that. So unless Sion Medley comes in next year and is averaging like 6.5 assists a game, I don't know. If you circle back in a few years on this, I think we give drastically different answers.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be hard to see how they can replace him. Obviously, assists are much harder to get in college basketball than like the NBA. So, you know, you don't see guys average double-digit assists. You don't see guys putting up double-digit assist games every night or every other night. And this is something where, yeah, even a game where Sloot plays bad, I sit there, I look at the box score, and Jurie put up 13 assists. And for anybody else, that's a career night. For Jurie, it's, you know, ho-hum, just another game.
Yeah, you know, one last point, too, not to belabor this, but I mean, if you ever have Seth Greenberg on this show, I need you guys to tell him that he's wrong. He tweeted yesterday, Tyler Kolek is the best passer in the country. He's wrong. Former wrong. A-10 player, Tyler Kolek, great passer at Marquette, great point guard. He's not the best passer in the country. Just thanks, Seth Greenberg.
I'll jump in here real quick. Seth Greenberg definitely thinks he's too important to go on any podcast that is not directly affiliated with the Worldwide Leader.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he gave a compliment to a player on a Fox network.
Yeah, that's like, wild.
I did a double take. I was like, I thought you were going to say someone else. Like Marquise Newell, who's number two in the country in assists, he plays in the Big 12. It's right there, man. Like, that's an ESPN product. But, oh well. But I definitely agree. I don't think you'll find him on any fan podcast anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But with Jurie Collins and all of his great individual accomplishments, as you guys touched on, clearly the Billikens are going to look so much better next year when they have to replace him, likely with incoming freshman Sion Medley. But something I'm curious for your guys' input on, and I believe it was the two of you who tweeted it. If not, it could have been some other St. Louis fans. But just talking about the identity shift that the Billikens have had the last couple of years under Travis Ford, where when he got there, the Billikens were your prototypical bully ball team. They were going to beat you up with offensive rebounds and block shots and just wear you down. Now it's been a much more finesse-oriented team, a lot more reliant on outside shooting and speed. So what has been your guys' take on that? Do you think it's the right direction for the team to go, or is there maybe a philosophical change that the team could implement in the second half of the season to have more success?
So I want to start out. I think that's a great question. And the way I look at it is this. I think the bully ball approach was a necessary evil based on the status of the program Travis Ford took over. I think that playing that ultra physical, defensive first, low offense can bring a program out of the dumps to respectability pretty quickly. I think that just out physically in people is a great way to kind of mask. I'm not saying talent deficiencies with that team necessarily, but it is a way when you are like a 200 KenPom team to, you know, creep up towards 100. I think that this shift to a more offensive and finesse based approach was kind of a multi-year attempt at, you know, plugging away at those weaknesses that had kind of plagued SLU when they were trying to break through from a top 100-ish team to a top 75 team. Whether or not it's the right or wrong approach, I don't necessarily know. And you didn't even really fully ask that, but I think in a general sense, I don't really know if anyone can say if it's right, wrong. This year, SLU has without a doubt underperformed as a direct result of some of their primary shooters really, really struggling. Whether it's from three, like with Gibson Jimerson, who's in a cold streak right now that we've never really seen from him. Like he has a couple bad games every year, but he's on like a month-long cold streak. Javonte Perkins hasn't gotten fully up to speed. So it's kind of hard to tell like if this finesse approach and more offensive focus is the right move or the wrong move, just because they've had such strong shooting struggles so far this year. I think for the rest of the year, like the past two games have kind of indicated a way that they're going to try and do something different with playing someone like Larry Hughes Jr., who doesn't need to take a bunch of shots to make a positive offensive impact. Sincere Parker has started to get more hot, but you know, I don't necessarily know, like looking at next year's team when they're losing so much. Like, I don't know if we can even say we know next year if they're going to be finesse or bully ball or somewhere in between. I don't know, Dan, if you had anything more on that. We could talk about this for hours because it legitimately fascinates me, especially like how they recruit now. It's very different.
Yeah, I mean, you hit a lot of the major points for sure. Yeah, the bully ball approach was just kind of I think it was a very personnel-based approach. I think it helps cover over the holes that they had very clearly on offense. But yeah, I think that it's helpful to have a little bit of that in your team, and we've seen it the last game or two, like John said. That's kind of a direction we'd like to see them move a little bit, at least I think, just to be a little bit more physical and less reliant on, you know, particular shooting, especially threes when they're not open, etc. Yeah, I mean, the shift away, it's felt pretty drastic, honestly, over the last probably year or two. I think the best hybrid that they had between you know, the old style and the new style was probably last year. We did see it early this year when shots were falling, but when they're not, they like don't have that mentality to be able to really muck it up like the old teams used to.
And I think one last thing, like, this shift feels so drastic and kind of did last, even last year when it was more hybrid. Like, there've been a lot of fans of SLU who have kind of been wondering, you know, why can't we be tough like we used to in the past? And not like they losing Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French a couple years ago, like, those two guys were two of the toughest players I've ever seen at a program that historically has a lot of tough players. You don't naturally replace a Jordan Goodwin toughness and a Hassan French. Like, you try and you kind of need to do it by committee. But part of the reason the fall off feels so drastic and why this year's team feels, I don't want to say soft, but like relatively soft, is because it's really easy to look back at a couple years ago and be like, we had these two bulldogs on the court, and you have no one that is even close to that now. And I don't think that's a bad thing or a good thing. It's just a thing. And it's just a symptom that I don't think as a fan base, we've fully calibrated our expectations to yet, because it's so recent, even though it's a couple seasons ago.
So St. Louis Twitter yesterday, after the big win over St. Bonaventure, someone, and apologies to whoever tweeted this out, really went in on basically like a litany of ideas for how St. Louis can tweak their rotation here. And it involved playing more Larry Hughes Jr. It involved switching up the minutes distribution at the center position. So moving forward, in order to try to give this team a little bit more toughness and to improve the three-point shooting, let's say it's the A-10 tournament, you have a tie game with 2 minutes left. Who are the five you want on the floor at this point, especially with Fred Thatch being out for the season now and unfortunately out for his career?
I mean, Dan, I was going to say you go first on this.
Yeah. I guess the five that at least I probably want to see on the court at the end. I mean, it's obviously Jurie. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think Pickett is possibly the second most important player in this five, where he can come up with and get some stops. He can make a shot if he needs to. We've seen him make some important shots, I guess, kind of late in the game a few times. I think you need a guy like Jimerson, Perkins, Parker to be able to space the floor. You're not going to obviously put all of them on the floor, but you're going to need one, probably have two. So I'd probably go with whoever the hot hand is. For ease, we'll say Jimerson and Perkins. But if Parker's hot, I'd leave him on the floor. And then I might be a hot take. I'd probably put Forrester on the floor at the five.
I don't think that's that hot of a take, honestly.
I mean, Okoro's had a tough stretch, but I mean, Forrester does a lot of things really, really well. And when Okoro's struggling, I mean, he's a great option to go to, and it's to the point that I've seen a few people, we've talked about it ourselves, but you've seen a few people talk about, you know, is it time to think about putting him in the starting lineup over Okoro? And I don't know, maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't. I get the argument for both sides, but at this point, I think late in the game, I'd like to see him out there.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar to you. I do have a couple hot takes with the lineup, though. I think at this point, I think it needs to be Jurie. Even though he's been cold, I think it's Jurie, Gibson, Pickett, Forrester, and honestly, I'm trying not to overreact to a small sample size, but I think Larry Hughes Jr. I think he is the second best perimeter defender on this team already as a freshman. He is a really good outside shooter. He is just solid defensively. He doesn't try to play outside of himself. And it's just this very efficient and very team-focused approach that he plays. And he's going to play pretty much the rest of the season because he's assuming a chunk of Fred's minutes, just the backup point guard minutes alone, which is, it's only like 4 or 5 minutes, but he can play multiple positions in this offense. And I was talking with, there was a slew post-game spaces yesterday. Everything just looks better when he's on the court. And maybe it's a small sample size. It's only been against three teams, but it just looks better. And I think at this point in the year, you just have to roll with that until it doesn't work. And hopefully it's still working in March in Brooklyn.
So obviously not a big option, but let's say hypothetically, as long as you're not facing either Daron Holmes, Jalen Deloach, Sam Mininga in this scenario, is there any chance that Ford tries to go to Terrence Hargrove at center at any point to add some floor spacing, get these young shooters out there? Because
yeah, so
as good as Forster and Okoro are on the boards, like they're just not converting down low. So it's not like it really kills your offense.
So Forster lately, I think the last like 5 or 6 games, has been converting pretty well at the rim. But Terrence at the five is something that they've been doing for a couple weeks now, at least. And it's something they played around with in the previous 3 years with him here. It works against bigs that you didn't mention, and with the caveat that it has to be in small spurts. If you run with it more than like 3 or 4 minutes at a time, it eventually kind of gets exploited. I think he's looked pretty good at the four. And honestly, the idea that I've tossed around, I don't know if we both agree on this, but I do like him starting, just, you know, get him until that first media timeout, start him at the four over Pickett, and he just gives you energy to start out the game. Will it always be the best production? You know, flip a coin. It might be good, it might be bad, but the one thing he will give you is he's going to bust it for 4 minutes. So I do think that TJ is someone that, due to Fred's injury, is going to play a little bit more. And like you said, due to the bigs being inconsistent, to put it lightly.
Yeah, and offensively in that St. Bonaventure game, it felt like he basically just did all the Thatch stuff. He was playing really well as a role man. He was the one guy making tough baskets at the rim, which basically until Forster started to play better here in these last few games, was something that literally no one on this team besides Fred Thatch and occasionally Yuri Collins did.
Yeah.
They were so bad scoring at the rim, and Hargrove was really the one guy who was willing to fight with Chad Venning on that end in that St. Bonaventure game. So he gave them a really nice spark, and I came away thinking that he has to be someone that maybe he doesn't necessarily close, but he has to be in your top six guys now the rest of this year.
Yeah, and I do think as a result of Thatch's injury, you know, Travis has played a deeper rotation, and he does tighten it up as the year goes on, but he's played more guys to start the year than he typically does. But, you know, Fred isn't someone that's, his production is not going to be replaced by one guy. There's no one on this roster that does what he does. He was the definition of a glue guy. And, you know, whether it's in a couple extra minutes out of TJ or Sincere or whomever, the fact of the matter is, just from watching, you know, a game and a half of basketball without Fred on the floor, it's going to be, you just got to try stuff until you find something that works. They have a really good athlete on the bench right now in Kellen Thames. I have a sneaking suspicion that he's going to get a chance in a couple of these lower A-10 games.
23 minutes total this year.
Yeah, he hasn't played much, but he's like an athletic freak. I don't fully know what SLU has in him, but he is the son of a player who was good at Mizzou until he blew his knee out, Kelly Thames. Like, you know, I just think that they have to try something, because at the chances of an at-large bid are dead. So the whole point of this season is figure out what's going to win you three or four games in Brooklyn. Hopefully only three.
So taking a look here, you got a pretty easy stretch coming up for the rest of January, your next half dozen games. Home for George Mason and LaSalle. And as we've been tweeting about, the A-10 so far, home court is a haven for everyone so far. We've only seen four teams go on the road and win. Three of those were at Loyola, at Fordham, and at St. Joe's, who could potentially be three of the four worst teams in this league. The one tough win is Dayton going down and beating Davidson. But St. Louis has one of those road wins. They were the team that beat St. Joe's. And in this upcoming stretch, your road games are at GW, at Loyola, at Davidson, at Fordham. Not exactly easy, but if you had to pick some teams in the A-10 to go into their building, those are near the top of your list.
Not Davidson. That's the house of horrors. They will lose that game.
I didn't say they were all easy. You can't get four gift of road games. Like,
no, right.
You're already playing defeated. LaSalle at home in this stretch.
But they could be,
you don't get to play them on the road, too.
Davidson could be 350 in the country. So would lose that belt.
Yeah. Until SLU plays a good half of basketball at Belk, my assumption is that they are going to lose by 30. So,
it
prove us wrong. Make this the year that it's wrong. I'd be very happy. Though if they win at Belk, I think they would lose out. I think they would lose every other game because the universe would be broken.
So, good. You already kind of went in. Like, where's this team sitting when the calendar turns into February, because then it gets really tough. You get the double Dayton, the double VCU, Davidson again, Duquesne, who's caused Travis Ford a little bit of trouble. You have to go to Richmond. Like, if St. Louis is going to make a big swing for a top two spot here, it's got to come in these next few games.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but yeah, there's a lot of gettable games coming up. I think on KenPom, they're favored in maybe their next eight or so.
Yep, it is the next eight.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, eight in a row would be great. Would love all eight. Probably unlikely, but yeah, certainly gettable games. The road, like you mentioned, it's tough to go on the road, especially this year. It's going to be tough going to Davidson. GW is playing well, so going to have to go there. And then you open February at VCU. I would love to have won, I guess, five out of those six. I think that's probably a good number to hit, a good benchmark. Realistically, where they're sitting, I'd probably say that they go 4-2 in their next six.
Yeah, I think that's fair just because four of these next six are on the road. And Tyler, as you alluded to, no A-10 team is winning on the road this year. Like, it happens sparingly, but even in non-conference, like, I mean, this is a down year for the league, and, you know, there's an argument to be had if it's due to expectations or, you know, whatever. But a consistent theme this year is that no one really can win away from home. So I would love it to say, you know, SLU's going to go 5-1 with that one loss at Belk, but I don't think you can really trust until a team, including SLU, shows they can consistently win away from home. I don't know that you can trust anyone to do it. I just, it's really hard to envision. I mean, even like yesterday, we were watching Duquesne and Richmond. Duquesne blew a 22-point lead on the road. And Richmond is fine this year. But, you know, at halftime, if you would have said, does this game end up close? I would have said no, you know. But for whatever reason, this is just a really home-dominant league this year.
Yeah, and so with that being the case, too, I'm curious your guys' take. What record do you think it takes for an Atlantic 10 team to get a double bye? Because I'm looking back at the 2018 season where we had something similar, just a lot of parity, a lot of teams in the middle of the pack beating up on each other, and St. Joe's ended up going 10-8 and taking fourth place. Do you think this could be something similar where most teams just win their home games and we get a lot of a lot of groups around 500.
I don't know. See, 10 wins feels too low. Like, even in a year where we're not high on the league collectively, 10 wins is really low. Like, I do think
there's still some bad teams at the bottom.
Like, I do think some of these teams that are more towards the middle of the conference in terms of talent or coaching or combination of the two, I think that they're going to benefit from these double bye pairings. Like, even though UMass lost yesterday to
GW.
To GW, like, they still have a pretty favorable home and home thing. I think Mason's is pretty softish too. Duquesne is the one. Like, I think Duquesne's gonna get like 13 wins, even though they struggled. Like, winning at Richmond's not easy, even with the roster makeup they have. Like, I think the four spot is gonna be, I'm gonna say 12 wins is the four spot, but like three teams have 11 or so. Like, it's pretty close, and it's decided by some of these kind of softer home and homes.
Yeah, I was going to say probably 11 and 7, but you're going to have the right tiebreakers to get the four with 11 wins. Because there's probably going to be three teams or so with 11, so it's going to be, you know, 4, 5, 6, 3, 4, 5, something like that. So you're going to have to fall in the right spot.
Yeah, actually, I like that answer way more.
You talk about the schedule split, and Duquesne's the perfect example of that, where they're 2-2 right now. But you go through their schedule, and you can make a pretty good argument. They've already played two of their three hardest games. At Dayton, yeah. At Richmond, two teams that they don't get a return game from. They still have to go to Chaffetz, but St. Louis doesn't come back to Pittsburgh. Like, their home and home pairings are pretty easy. They get Bonaventure twice, but Bonaventure still hasn't won on the road. They're 0-5.
I mean, looking at St. Joe's, looking at KenPom right now, I mean, the only game Duquesne is, like, at Bonaventure is a pick'em, but
like, so is that UMass?
Yeah. At UMass? Oh, yeah. I didn't look at it. That, no. But, I mean, they're favored in almost every game except at SLU. So I could see Duquesne ripping off, you know, 13, 14 wins. And I probably wouldn't blink because, as you said, they've played two of their toughest three games already.
So I wanted to hit this right after we finished the St. Louis talk, but we're close to wrapping that up anyway. So we'll jump it ahead here. For you guys watching from an outside perspective, we'll take your Billikens out of it and we'll take Dayton out of it because they look pretty good right now. Of the remaining 13 teams, who do you guys feel like is the best in this league?
That's a tough question.
I want to say Duquesne. I really do. They have so much volatility in games, though. Like, I forget who said it, but like, they have more 20-point swings than any team in this league, and they do it in both directions. Like, so I want to say Duquesne, but I'm like, in the back of my head, I kind of want to say Richmond also, and it does not have anything to do with yesterday. Like, I kind of like Richmond a lot this year.
Well, that's the thing, and I still haven't seen anyone talk about it, but I went into that game feeling like there was a very reasonable chance that the second-best team in the A-10 was playing in it.
Yeah.
And right now,
I don't think that's a stretch.
I think it's Duquesne, St. Louis, Richmond, Dayton are sitting somewhere around the top four, and then VCU, Davidson, and Mason are just kind of waiting to see if any of them take another step up.
If Davidson wouldn't have gotten throttled by VCU in the last 35 minutes yesterday, because at the 5-minute mark, that's when that game turned, I would have felt very comfortable saying Dayton or Davidson's going to be in the mix for a double bye. Their lack of outside shooting and their ability to just get burned by plus athletic teams is what kind of holds me back from that. But I don't hate what Davidson is right now. And I think that when they kind of fully evolve into what Matt McKillop is doing, I think they're going to be fine, but not this year.
All right, so we'll close out the St. Louis talk here. are we going to see a big Javonte Perkins game here some point in these last 2 months? Like, what's the rest of his season look like? Because it's a tough injury. It can take a guy who's not a professional athlete getting professional care some time to get back. But if we see old Javonte Perkins for even 3-4 games, like, that could swing their entire season.
Yeah, I think that's that might be a pretty important part, or I guess something to watch for the next 2 weeks, probably till the end of the month, where we talked about these games that Slew will most likely be favored in most of them, sometimes heavily, like home against LaSalle, et cetera. I think that those are kind of games where he can kind of work on getting his and not have to worry about, you know, is it the right shot? Is it, you know, is this what the team needs? Where he can hopefully have some time and maybe some shots to kind of shoot himself out of it, or just be able to kind of get his legs back a little more. Even, I mean, maybe if he needs more rest, I don't really know what the issue is, but I'm hoping that he can use maybe the next 6 games, 7 games to kind of find his form again. Cause if he can, then when we come down the stretch with, you know, the home and home against Dayton, home and home with VCU, et cetera, then, you know, hopefully he'll be kind of at least 75% of his old self.
Yeah, I definitely think that. So to go to your question on, like, do we think we're going to see a couple like vintage Javonte Perkins performances this year? I'm not sure. We are the biggest Javonte Perkins supporters on the planet. One of our favorite players. We have been, you know, in his corner since day one. We both love junior college transfer ups. He has just looked uncomfortable this year, plain and simple. It's kind of like when Marcus Evans came back at VCU. I mean, it's eerily similar to that, different injury, but, you know, long layoff, very, very big mental hurdle to get over when you're coming back, even when you're physically healthy from it. You know, like Danny said, I really just hope we see it at least one. I mean, he's had a couple decent games this year, but even when he gets hot, like, it stops instantly. Like, it doesn't continue like when he had that shootout with Ryan Daly at St. Joe's, his second year, I think. Or no, that was his first year. I don't remember which year it was.
Oh, I don't remember.
But like when he has a couple possessions where it's like, okay, he's moving fluidly, he's hitting shots, like everything looks good. For some reason this year, it just stops. And there's a million reasons we could go into. Some people think he's gonna quick hook, whatever, debate that on your own time. The fact of the matter is, if he's gonna get right, it's gonna be in these next 6-ish games. And yeah, if he doesn't, I mean, I'm not sure if we'll see it.
And I think if we do see, you know, a 25-30 point game where he makes, you know, 5 threes and just can't miss, it's gonna be on the road. I don't know where it's gonna be, but it's gonna be on the road. Because that's where he usually doesn't.
Yeah, this is going to sound really weird. He looks significantly more uncomfortable at Chaffetz this year.
I don't know why either. I've noticed it. I don't know if it's, you know, something that I've, you know, incepted into my own brain into thinking this, but yeah, he seems like he's just not comfortable there. And I don't know why. He's clearly had some very good games there in the past. I just, I don't know if there's some kind of mental block or what it is, but I'm hoping that he can, you know, get out on the road and just figure it out somewhere at a road gym. It's too bad they don't. I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully it's at Davidson, for being honest.
I would say before that, the game I'm targeting is the next one that we'll be in attendance for. Wednesday, January 18th at Loyola Chicago. If he wants to drop,
I would love to see it.
If he wants to drop like 40 when we're in the gym, I would love it. But I mean, at Davidson, maybe Friday, February 10th against Dayton. That'd be pretty cool. I don't know. It'll be on the road. It'll be like at VCU. That'll be our lucked in. It'll be the second to last game of the year.
Yeah, that wouldn't be great. But as long as I can see one more vintage Javonte, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, John.
No, I that would just be my final point really on Javonte, is that, like, very selfishly, not from a SLU team perspective part, I just want to see him get it for him, because he came back. He had professional opportunities if he wanted to go to Europe. I don't think that's too much of a stretch to say. Like, I just want to see him have one vintage performance and be like, okay, SLU fans can, you know, have closure with him, be like, this guy's awesome. Like, and he was awesome, and we remember him as being awesome, because it's been tough to watch at parts this year.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you guys, but I don't even think there's a good answer for this. What road game you would most want to win here? But St. Louis has a lot coming up. You got the Arch Barron Cup game. You got the Make Ryan Paleo Mad game at the Charles Entertainment Smith Center. You got the potential revenge game in Belk. You got the new Midwest rivalry with a ton of SLU fans in Chicago. So there's a lot there, but we'll close out the real talk here with one final question for each of you. Where does this season go? And besides maybe a big Perkins performance, what do you want to see in these next 3 to 6 games that, if it happens, will make you start to get pretty excited about this team's hopes of winning the A-10 tournament or at least doing some sort of damage in March?
Yeah, I think the three things that I'm most looking forward to kind of judge where they're going to be. One, so I'll do the third thing last. If these first two things happen, the third thing will happen, and then, you know, everything cascades down. I think first and foremost, getting Gibson Jibberson right. He's been ice cold from three the last month, as I mentioned before earlier. Getting him to a point where he's shooting his normal 40-42% is going to be crucial, because he shoots way too much to shoot so poorly. Second, to go along with that, Sincere Parker continuing his kind of acclimation to D1. He's finally looked much more confident the past two games against UMass and Bonaventure. I have four things. Third, Larry Hughes Jr. continuing to play this backup point guard and kind of Robin to Yuri's Batman for stretches. I think it just works better, and it gives him an opportunity to win games. I think if they do those three things, particularly the first two guys getting hot, I don't see a reason why SLU still can't earn the 2 seed. I don't think anyone has fully separated themselves enough. Like, I think there are teams in contention for the top four. I don't think anyone has done anything definitively to this point to say this team is number two. I think Dayton's done enough to show they're number one. I think, especially with their injuries right now and how they're playing through it, I think Dayton has shown people that they're going to be the 1 seed, barring something crazy happening, which could happen. But I think that SLU can still 100% earn the 2 seed in the regular season, and I'd be disappointed if they didn't.
It's close, but I would even venture to say that they're probably still, if maybe only slight, but they're still a favorite to be number two.
Yeah, I know. I forget who it is. There's a great A-10 Twitter account that posts those seed probabilities. They start doing it after, what is it, like a game or two in conference play? Out. Yeah, I saw David Jablonski retweet them a couple times. And I think SLU's, like, most likely seed is, like, their highest part of the bell curve is still 2 and 3. So, I'm pretty confident that they're still going to earn a top four. There are some doom and gloom SLU fans that are like, oh, this team's going to crater to eighth. That's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. I'm anyone saying that just does not watch enough of the league.
I mean, and to me too, there's four guys who've separated themselves above every other player in this league right now, and one of them is Yuri Collins, and that gives you a floor as long as he continues to be out there.
Yeah, but to kind of wrap my thoughts, I think if they want to actually make a run in Brooklyn, they need to earn the 2 seed. I just think it has to shake out that way.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd like to just really see more shots fall. They've been fine getting quality shots, and they just a lot of times don't go in. Like we obviously talked about Gibson and Javonte Perkins really not being themselves, being a little cold. they have the shots. Like they're there. We see them, you know, in a ton of space, and for some reason they just don't go down a lot. And hopefully that kind of gets ironed out and comes back to the average at some point during, you know, this upcoming stretch, and they can kind of get right. I'd also like to see Okoro kind of regain his form from the end of last year. I mean, he was a menace around the rim last year. He struggled a lot early in the season, just finishing looks, whether contested or not at the rim. A lot of them were rimming out or off the back of the rim or something else. And we're seeing that again now, and it's kind of coming back where he's been a little bit better the last few games. But you know, late February last year, he was awesome. So I'd like to see him kind of get that back.
All right. So we'll close out this segment. I'm going to give everyone a quick stat of the day here. At 19-4, 82% win percentage, the A-10 is not number one in the country in home team win percentage. Anyone want to take a guess as to who is number one?
It's got to be a true Power 8 conference since it's not the A-10 anymore. I'm going to say it's the West Coast. I don't know.
I was going to go Big 12.
I think it's the Mountain West.
See, you all shot too high. I started searching at the bottom.
Oh, is it the SWAC?
John, you could not be closer. It is the MEAC, who is at 100% because, and here's the part you guys missed. They only started their conference season yesterday, so home teams.
Oh.
Small sample size, man.
All right, so we're going to close this episode out with a little fantasy draft. And for anyone who is a true diehard of this pod, you will remember that we did this with Richie and Dennis over at the Gola Standard last year. And the scoring system got way too complicated. It wasn't wrong because I won. And Matt finished significantly far back in last.
Ooh.
So
who did I pick? Do you have it up still?
You took Oshunashunahi, Hyungjoon Lee, Malachi Smith, Grant Golden, who did not score a single point in any of our categories, Gibson Jimerson, and we did teams last year, and you took St. Louis, who is the only team selected who did not get a double bye.
Wow, I took St. Louis. Never would have guessed that, but all right. Well, hey, but for Gibson Jimerson, you know, I'm doing my research for this, and he is one of two returning all-academic players, and that is considered for a fantasy draft, so...
Was that on the list? Time. Yes,
it is. It's on the list. I'm looking
okay,
at it.
Okay, so now we got to know who people are, who are smart.
That's how Dennis cleaned up taking Christian Ray in the final round last year.
That seems like an incredible loophole. But yeah, let me go pull some guys' GPAs real quick. It's going to change the calculus on this.
Yeah, they really got to add a row to that in 10 palm when you pull up a player card. But
yeah, did this
maybe
guy
that's
fail?
Like
did this guy fail accounting 101? I'd love to know that.
Well, actually, four of the five members of the all-academic team last year no longer play in this conference because, sadly, one of them was Fred Thatch. So, although
yeah,
he might
and
still
I think
be eligible, which could be interesting for that in that regard.
He should be. Isn't he going to be a doctor or something?
No, he was kicking around the idea of doing a doctorate, but he pursued a second master's instead. Mm. So just one thing, because we didn't really talk a lot of Fred Thatch. So news came out this week that he's not using his extra year of eligibility. That writing was kind of on the wall already when he chose to not pursue a doctorate and just do a second master's. So, like, I think Slu's been operating on the assumption he wouldn't be there next year based on that, because at some point he's in his sixth year of school. I think at some point you're like, I want to either make money or not take class anymore. So the doctor talk, that was nice for like a month, but from what we heard, it was shot down pretty quickly.
All right. So we're rolling into this draft. We simplified things a lot this year. You will receive 1 point if a player leads the league in any of the nine major categories: points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, field goal percentage, 3-point percentage, free throw percentage, triple nickels. You will receive 1 point if that player makes an award team, all conference, all rookie, all defensive, or all academic. You will also receive a second bonus point if that team is first team all conference. And you'll get 2 points for the player of the year, rookie of the year, defensive player of the year, sixth man of the year, or most improved. So obviously, if you can nail down one of those five awards, that's going to be the most important thing here. But we did a pre-episode coin flip, and Dan ended up with the first pick. We're going to take six guys in a snake draft format. And the only rule is, of your six, you have to be able to put out a five-man lineup that makes sense on a basketball court here. So no taking like six guards. If I see anything going into the sixth round to close that loophole, I'll call it out. But
can we go like Dayton and have four guys over 6'9"? I mean, we're pretty much
I was gonna say, can we go like jumbo lineups? Like, you know, if I think Josh Aduro is a point guard, who am I to be stopped there?
We'll just say if it's outrageous, you have to make your take at the end of the draft.
This I was thinking about forcing everyone to take one bench player, but that
would have gotten
too wild.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
I watch a ton, not as much as you guys, but I watch a ton of the other teams in the league. I can name starters very well from every team. You get into bench, can't do it.
Well, now that Des Watson starts, like the bench groups are really rough in this conference.
Well, actually, Davidson I can oddly do decently well, but it's because I spent most of the offseason defending their position when people were saying they were going to be like 10th. I went and deep dove the Davidson roster just to die on that hill, which I might still be dying on.
All right, I'm right there with you. But Dan, who are you taking with the number one overall pick here?
This is tough because I'm trying to figure out what's going to be the most valuable in these categories. I'm between a couple different guys. I think my first pick is going to be Holmes.
All right.
What's going to lead in field goal percentage?
Well, I think he could win player of the year, could win defensive player of the year. He's going to be first
I already forgot the actual awards were included.
So I figure he's probably got the highest chance to get the most awards. So I figure that's my guy, number one.
That's where I would have gone as well. So,
okay.
All right, John.
I think I got to go with the player that probably, well, he's a lock to lead in one category, and probably the second leader in the clubhouse for player of the year. I'll go Yuri Collins.
Yep, that was my second.
Probably triple nickel candidate leader too.
So that's a good one. And by the way, small sample size, but in the conference only statistics so far, he is actually leading the conference in field goal percentage because he is 10 of 12.
Ooh.
So a question on that, is there going to be some attempts cut off for field goal percentage, or is it just going to be whatever?
I'm going off of whatever gets posted on the official Atlantic 10 website.
Okay. Okay.
And it's conference only, right?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, this gets a lot tougher because as many good players as there are, those two were kind of the runaway best choices here. All right, so I'll swing for the first team all-conference bonus, a chance to potentially lead the league in rebounding, and maybe win defensive player of the year and take Tamani Kamara.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was going to be my pick, Max. I think you hit it on the head with good chance to lead in rebounds, and he'll at least get on small conference teams, especially if Dayton ends up leading the conference. We usually see two first-team players from whoever wins, and I think Kamara would be the easy second choice in addition to Holmes if that does happen. But so now it looks like I'm stuck with the wraparound pick, and that's tough. I think these were the three clear first choices to me. First, you know what? I'm going to go with James Bishop because I think there's a good chance he leads in points, and he might play his way onto the first team, especially if GW's respectable. And he's actually overing above 30 points through his first three conference games. Next up, you know, I think Another guy that could end up leading in scoring or at least get close, Josh Oduro is starting to play a lot better the last couple weeks. I think he'll be up there in rebounding too. Another potential first team guy. So those will be my two first picks.
Good. I was prepared to go completely insane, but I think this guy will be there in the third round. So since you left one sitting there for me, a guy that I feel is a lock for first team all conference and could potentially win the scoring title, I'll take Tyler Burton.
Oh man. Yeah. I took my pick.
I didn't think he was going to get to me, but.
Oh man. I'm between two guys now with mine. Really, really took away the thunder that I was going to do. Hold on one second. You know what? No, he's healthy now. And I think you can get away with playing a two guard backcourt. I'm going to go with Ace Baldwin. I think he's got a good chance of leading the conference in steals. And possibly like some shooting metrics because he's shooting better now for 3-point percentage. He was shooting like 60% from three at one point.
A chance at defensive player of the year too if VCU starts playing better.
Though I think VCU as a whole, like for defensive player of the year, I think it's always going to be really tough for their players to win it because it's so much a system identity. Not that don't dissuade that from taking VCU players, but just always think it's hard for them.
All right, Dan, you got the wraparound two here.
Yeah. I was waiting for one of those guys to fall and none of them did. So I think I'm gonna pick. So is rookie of the year is only freshman, right? There's no newcomer of the year, anything like that.
Yeah, it's just rookie of the year. Okay. So true freshman, and then Maximus Edwards is eligible because he didn't play a single game at Kansas State last year.
Okay, that makes sense. I think I'm gonna pick Day-Day Grant. I don't know, he's been really good, so I'm gonna pick him. And then my wraparound, I think maybe outside chance. I think he's certainly an all-conference team player. I don't know that he has a large shot for the first team. I think I'm going to take Quiz. I think Darius Quisenberry.
Potential shot at winning the scoring title, too.
Right. Yeah. So he's been really good. I think far and away the number one option on the team. I think that's the guy I want to go with.
Not that I was going to take either of those two guys, but it's tough. It's tough looking at that. There is a significant drop off when you get through the names we've already named. I think I'm between two guys. I think I'm going to go with the guy that another person with a crack at the scoring title. I'm going to go with Darryl Banks. Super streaky, but man, when he's hot, he's hot.
All right. We're now at the point I almost took him second round, but as we get this deep, I'm just going to go grab the guaranteed 2 points, knowing that he has an absolute maximum of three and probably won't even get there. But Kobe Bray is going to win sixth man of the year.
Like, he has to play.
No one else has any good bench players. Yeah. I went through the list trying to figure this out. That if Des Watson's a starter for Davidson, there is no one else who is even close. And he's shooting 42% from three over the six-game win streak now that he's back fully healthy. So if he can continue to heat up, he might win the three-point title. So I'll just go grab that sixth man of the year award right now.
Oof, I'm starting to have my doubts about a six-round draft, guys, but see if I can come up with enough great players here. So first one...
I'm just start taking crazy freshmen.
Well, so I might do that with one pick, but first off, I'm going to take one of your guys, Tyler. I think he has an outside shot after his huge game against VCU, could lead the league in steals. I'll take Trey Clark from Duquesne as my first pick. And then next up, you know, this is a guy with a very unlikely, but could lead the league in rebounding. I think he's almost a lock for all rookie teams, so we'll just get some points on the board, and I'll take Jan Farrell from St. Bonaventure.
All right, I'm going to go a little outside the box here because the guy that I think has a good chance to be all conference, and I'm just going to keep hunting those awards, see if we can grab most improved player of the year here, and that's Brendan Adams of GW, who basically got benched last season and is now was clearly one of the 15 best players in the league in the non-conference.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I'm a little guard heavy, so now I'm trying to look at forwards and posts, and that's not a good place to be in.
Oh my god, I screwed up bad, and I'm interested to see if either of you guys catch it. I think screwed this up.
Who did you take?
I took Brendan Adams.
Okay.
Hold on. I can't place your screw up at this point. I'm gonna have to reflect on this. Though Brendan Adams is a great pick. Man, he is rated really well. He hasn't been as good as he was last year. But I have this weird feeling that in conference play, that for some reason Ticket Gaines is gonna sneak on an all conference team. I'm gonna go with Ticket Gaines. I don't know what he's gonna get me a point in, but I think he's gonna get me a point. So I'm gonna go with him.
Could be all defense potentially, could, with George Mason playing so well on the defensive end.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sticking with Ticket Gaines.
Oof. All right. Can I go with two? So I already have Holmes. Can I go with two fives or not?
Yeah, you'll probably need to grab a forward in the last round, though.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I'm really, really don't know where I want to go here.
Tyler, I think I know exactly who the huge mistake is.
I think you do too, but you don't pick till after me. So
I know you're gonna take him. And there's one super obvious pick. Yeah, one fan base.
I can't believe I'm listening
to this. Yeah,
I think I don't know if it's a good pick. Really don't know. Just throwing darts here. I'm gonna pick Jalen Deloach.
I had him on my list. That's not bad.
A lot of blocks, a lot of steals.
Yeah.
Or at least a high percentage. Gets a good amount of rebounds. Not sure he'll lead, but I'll take him. And then
I feel like this could be like Dennis snagging Chuba Ohams in the fifth last year.
Yeah.
Slips onto all conference, makes the all defensive team, and then I think he led in rebounds like by a huge margin, so.
And then this is only the fifth one that I have, right? I don't know if I remember who's all been picked, but so just tell me if I'm not keeping track, so just tell me if they've already been picked. I think I'm gonna pick Eric Reynolds.
That's sneaky. He's gonna put up some numbers, even though St. Joe's might finish in the basement.
Yeah,
but they're bad, but so he's the guy with the ball in his hands, so maybe he makes something happen for me.
So I think I figured out Tyler's big omission because I think it's a guaranteed point. I'm really guard heavy, but I'm gonna do it until I'm told not to. I'm gonna go with Foster Lawyer.
Yep, damn it, that was it. Because he might win
he's
steals
a lock,
and he might finish first team.
I think he's a lock for first team free throw.
Yeah. I was looking at him because I was looking at the free throw percentage. I looked at him and then I thought that I had too many guards, so I didn't take him. But
yeah, my team's small. We're scrappy.
Mm-hmm.
Ticket can play the five on a good day.
All right, so it gets a lot harder now because I was hoping that no one was going to catch that one. God, because we're basically just kind of hunting the big man stats here.
It's not a good place to be with this league right now.
I'm going just insanely out of the box here. Because he has almost no chance of making all conference, but he could lead in both rebounds and blocks. And that's Abdu Simbila of Fordham.
I looked at him too.
Ow.
I feel like this is, I feel like he's probably got a higher chance of scoring nothing than anyone else who's been taken so far, but I'll go for it.
God, I'm looking at the free throw percentage leaders, and a lot of the guys worth taking are already gone.
Yeah, Lawyer, Reynolds, Quisenberry, Adams, Day-Day Grant, all in the top seven.
Yeah, I'm having trouble.
I better win that one.
I think, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and take one of your guys, John and Dan. I'll take the academic team point with Gibson Jimerson in hopes he figures out his three-point shooting well enough to make it all onto the all-conference team. And so I can pretty much go anywhere. I feel like my team's well-balanced. So for my sixth man, oh boy. I think I'm going to go with, you know what? He was my preseason pick for Rookie of the Year. I think he still has a shot. Give me Jason Nelson.
That's where I was going to, that's exactly where I was going to go. Because
so where would you go?
The way Richmond is starting to play right now too, like it's actually not impossible he sneaks onto all conference.
Especially if Richmond, if they end up finishing top three in the conference, which is possible. I mean, it's wide open. So if there's a freshman that does make it all onto all conference, I think it's him.
All right, my last pick, I'll go really safe. Grab a guy that I know is going to be all conference, and maybe he gets me the rebounding title, and that's Semenenga.
That was my pick.
Yep. Thinking about him.
So I think for mine, I'm going to take a chance. I got to take a chance on a freshman. And man, there's like three names that stick out and I don't trust any of them. I'm going to go with RJ Lewis from UMass. I think that if any of those UMass freshmen are going to end up on the all rookie team, I think it's going to be him. I don't think Kapari plays enough to actually make it on there. But maybe that changes. I don't know.
All right, Dan, who's going to be Mr. Irrelevant?
All right. I think I'm kind of hunting freshman here too. I think he's got a good shot to make the freshman team. I really don't know what he's been up to probably the last 3 weeks, but I always hear his name. I'm going to pick Mongolian Mike.
He could potentially get some triple nickels. He usually gets the points and assists. Not often he gets five rebounds, but that's a sneaky pick. I think he does eventually get back on track to where he was, and he'll end up on all rookie.
All right, that's the draft. Are we willing to allow a brief waiver wire period here?
I thought we were cutting down on the complexity this year.
Because I was fully prepared to cut Abdu Simbila because I realized we actually did miss somebody here.
Well, I'm going to say no on the waiver wire, but I do want to know.
Who did we miss?
Someone should have taken Noah Fernandes because he's got a good shot at all conference and he's the triple nickel god.
I was thinking about him, but I forgot about the triple nickels because he hasn't had one in a while. But you're right.
Yeah, because he's been hurt for a while. So,
well,
yeah.
I also think that just from watching them up close the last two games, like his role and what he does is so different than under McCall. Like it's almost a completely different player. And it just made me hard. I did consider him. It makes it hard to bet on him for this list. Just because he's not putting up those gaudy, like Matt McCall lets you shoot 30 times a game numbers anymore, even though he does so much on the court well. But he probably was the guy we're going to look back on and be like, we should have picked him.
Yeah, I just think like if UMass finishes top half, they're getting somebody in the all-conference team.
Yeah.
And if you ignore the numbers and just watch that team play, he's still clearly their best player.
Oh, it's not even close. Like, I mean, Gapare makes probably the biggest impact when he's in, but he's not their best player. Like, it's Fernandes.
It's him, and then it's Matt Cross.
I'll disagree on that one. I think DeAndre Dominguez looks a little bit better.
Dominguez.
He plays a very old school game. I like it a lot.
I'm pretty sure, isn't he like the efficiency god this year too?
I think he's like 72% from the field or something ridiculous like that, because he doesn't really shoot unless he's wide open. I could be making it up though.
61% in field goal percentage, basically in the top 10 with just a bunch of natural centers. Welch, Dean, Quinn, Holmes, Conte, Deloach, Venning, Lindo, Menenga. So
yeah, and he, like, from watching him, he literally does not shoot unless he's wide open. It is, anything is uncontested. I'd be surprised if he has attempted a shot with someone within like 3 feet of him all year. It's incredibly cool and bizarre. But like you said, efficiency god.
All right, shout out DeAndre Dominguez because he's deserving of it. And I don't think we've given him any airtime yet on this podcast this year. But John and Dan, thank you for joining us. Where can everybody find your fantastic work?
You can find us at Twitter. The handle is at West Pine Bills. We also have an Instagram. We barely post there. Actually, just repost some stories every once in a while at West Pine Bills. We'll eventually make some content on that. We have a very sporadic podcast, the West Pine Bills Show. Whenever we put on an episode, we put on an episode. Probably do one soon. But I think that covers it, Dan, right? Nothing I'm missing?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think you missed anything.
We have an email, but don't email that. But yeah, thanks for having us on. It's always a pleasure to talk with you guys. No one really covers the A-10 as a whole as well as you guys do. And it comes to the field of 68. You guys are a much better product than them, in our opinion. Shout out to you guys.
All I'll say is we didn't take 2 weeks off for Christmas.
No, you were Santa. You opened up the mailbag.
Yeah, they did come back. I will actually shout them out. They came back with a pretty good interview with Daron Holmes that was very interesting and really got into the psyche of Dayton struggling out of the gate. Daron was very open about the fact that they were not focused to start the year, and it kind of makes sense how they were able to really just flip the switch after they hit rock bottom against Virginia Tech, because they are focused now. So, but everyone be sure to go follow the guys at West Pine. And a big thanks to them for joining us. Big thank you to all of you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us a review on there. And enjoy this week of A-10 basketball. The Wednesday and Saturday clusters are finally gone. We have 2 Thursday games. And hashtag Friday A-10 returns this week.